This is Bob Gilmore. I'm interviewing Keith Edwards at the Old Northside Elementary School on December 14th in the year 2000. Good afternoon, Keith.
Good afternoon.
I want to start the interview by asking you a broad question, and that is, what was it like growing up in and when did you grow up in Chapel Hill? I don't want to ask your specific age. And I'd specifically like to know about your parents.
Okay. Well, I was born in 1950, and I lived in Carrboro. And I had my mother and father. My mother and father, they both were cooks and also housekeepers. And I grew up with 10 other brothers and sisters. And we attended public schools here. One was Northside Elementary School, and the other one was Lincoln High School. And as a small child growing up, entering Northside Elementary School, I was following behind my siblings, my older siblings. And so as a child of 5 years old, I just could not wait to get over here to Northside. And once I was here, I was assigned to a class, and the kids that I went to school with from the first grade on, I was also in all their classes on up, you know, until I graduated from the sixth grade here at Northside Elementary School. So we had the same kids in each class, and you just remain with them. And by us remaining together, we formed a closeness like brothers and sisters, a type of kinship, because we look forward to being with each other every year. And so after I graduated from the sixth grade, all through my years, maybe probably back at 4 years old, I had been preparing myself to attend Lincoln High School.
Before we get on to Lincoln, what were the size of your classes, and can you tell me about your teachers at Northside?
Well, at Northside, we had teachers, let me see, I think it was maybe, could have been 20 or 25, I think it was probably about, it could have been maybe about 25 kids in your class. And it was cold in the building. We had heat, but we had radiator heaters. And if you know anything about radiator heaters, they don't put out a whole lot of heat, especially if you're in a damp and old building. And so we were kind of cool in the winter. And we just roasted during the summer because no one had air conditioning. And we only had one fan in the school, and that fan was placed near the teacher's desk. The teacher kept cool. And all we could do was keep our windows open, and we used to take our notebook paper and make paper fans. And you would fan all day, you know, just trying to keep cool. And we had lessons in the mornings, and we had recess in the morning. And then we went back and did more. We had more lessons. And then we went out. We went to a lunch. As a matter of fact, we went right down this hallway, since we in the old Northside Elementary School building. We went right down the hallway, and we took a right turn, and then we went down to the cafeteria. And we had lunch. And after lunch, we came back. And then we went back to more lessons. And then in afternoon, we had another recess where we went outside. Now, we went outside. The only time we didn't go outside was when it was raining or sleeting. But we did go out in the snow. Also, during the summer months, we went out in what we called, we had recreation outside. Sometimes we played what we called dodgeball, kickball. We just did activities outside, you know, to give the kids a chance to get outside. Then we would come back inside the building, more lessons, and then school bell ring, and it's time for us to go home. And so, majority of the kids that lived in your area where you lived at, we all walked together. And it was expected for us to walk to school together and walk back home together. And after we got home, the next thing we did, we put our school books down and we would just dash over to Hargrave Center, because that's where all the kids met in the afternoons. I don't even think our parents had to even worry about babysitters back then, because kids were only allowed to go so many places. But wherever you went, it was always in the black community. You did not go outside of the black community, not unless it was like on a Sunday. On a Sunday, we would go to the ice cream parlor. And that was on West Franklin Street, right up where the courtyard is located now. We went there after church and got us some ice cream and all. And then, you know, we would walk home, and after church we eat a big, what we call big lunch. We had fried chicken, turnip greens, they either call it greens, rice and gravy, home-cooked biscuits, and let me see, sometimes we would have what they call stewed tomatoes. That would be our dessert. That was only some red cut up tomatoes, and then you would have some cinnamon in there, some brown sugar and butter, and it was delicious. But we only had that meal once a week. And as I was growing up, everything was in its place, and everything came at its time. What I mean by that is talking about our meals. Through the week, Monday through Friday, you may eat anything. You may eat some beans, a piece of bread, fatted meat, or something of that nature. And, you know, having a large family, you couldn't afford to eat chicken and stuff every night. You just couldn't do it. So anyway, you may eat anything, pork and beans and wieners and all that during the week. And on Fridays, that was a special day in the black community also, because all you could smell was fish. Everybody had fish on Fridays. So when school was out on Fridays, we couldn't wait to get home, and we'd run to Hungry Center and play a little while, which it was Robinson Street Center, community center at the time, not Hungry Center. But we called it the Robinson Street Community Center, and we all went there and we played. Then everybody ran home to get their fish. You know, sometimes they would have sauerkraut with it or cabbage. And, you know, you just expected that every Friday, even during the winter months, that, it, you know, you had it. And you could smell it all over the community, no matter what street you went on. You could just smell it. Flies were everywhere because you know about the cabbage and the fish. But we had that. And so that was what I'm referring to. Everything had its time and had its place. Now, on Saturdays, a lot of times we had pork and beans and wieners, or we even had pinto beans and maybe a piece of fat meat, homemade biscuit. But on Sundays, no matter what you had, what you ate 6 days a week, Sunday was going to be your special meal. And you only had maybe milk or either water to drink, you know, with your meals on, you know, the first 6 days. But on that Sunday, you had Kool-Aid. It was a treat. Sunday was a treat. It was a special day, and it was a family day. And every family spent time with each other. Mother, father, children, that was your day. It was mandatory that you go to church. You went to Sunday school, you went to church, and after church, you know, sometimes we would go by and get us some ice cream, and then we would come home, and then we have that fabulous meal. And after we had our meal, then the kids in the community, they would all get together. They would either just go walking, or they would go to the community center. And most of the time, the community center was not open on Sunday, but that didn't stop the kids from going there. We just went, and we would have our own balls, our own bats, and, you know, it was something for us to do. But still, our parents did not have to worry about our welfare, because we knew where to go. You knew your limits, and that was one of the places you could go. The other place we went is sometimes Moorhead Planetarium. Sometimes they had some things going on, and but that was allowed on Sundays. So you just had specific places you went, and that did not give your parents any cause for alarm. Even though at that time there were some things that were going on, you know, some bad things, or sometimes you were out at night and you may see a group of white males that may not have anything better to do. They may start harassing someone. To avoid that, you always just walked in groups and all. And they very seldom did it to small children, but, you know, older.
That's why you walked in group to school and...
Well, you felt safe because you was in your own community. Right. You didn't have to worry about that. It's just whenever you went outside of your community.
Right.
You have to always have it in the back of your mind. It's just like there's something that's taught to you from the womb, and after you get out of the womb, it's taught to you every day. And so when you get of age, like I'm saying, that you realize you can talk, you realize what's right and wrong, that's locked in your mind, so you know what to do. You're already programmed. if you're on the sidewalk, because I was born in Caldwell, but if you, let's take for instance, if you are on the sidewalk and a white person is approaching you from the other direction or behind you, to avoid a confrontation because you didn't know what type of behavior this white person had. If they had any type of racist views or whatever, you had no way of knowing that right offhand. The proper thing to do to avoid a confrontation, as my parents taught us, just stop, let them pass, let them have the sidewalk. If it's not enough room for you to do that, then just step off, even if you have to step in the street. It avoids a confrontation, especially if you are a male and a white female is coming. Because at that time, all a white female had to do was scream or say something, say that you said something to them. And if that happened, then you just didn't have a prayer. It was your word against her word, and back then in the 50s and 60s, 40s, they believed her. So you were taught little things, you know, right from a child, and that kept you out of a whole lot of, you know, let's say, burdensome situations. Situations that you didn't even have to worry about if you just stayed in your place.
Could you have eye contact with white people when you would be out on the streets? Was that something you were taught? Or?
Well, no, I was not taught not to have an eye contact. I mean, you can look at them, you know, it's up to you, but I really didn't, because these people were not a part of my world, and I knew they were just passing through because they had to pass my house sometime to get where they wanted to get, you know, if they were walking. Because they walked through the black community untouched. You know, no one harassed them or said anything, you know. It's just that we used to have a little joke. Whenever you cross the railroad track, where it is going to Carver, you know, like out by Kentucky Fried Chicken, if you go that way and you cross that railroad track, you're going to have some problems. Because a lot of your low-income whites lived out in that area. And Carver at the time was known for where they had a reputation of having some racist people then. But I don't think it was so much as being racist as being poor, as being in the same economic status as many of your blacks, because there were some blacks who lived in Caldwell who lived better than some of the poor whites there.
Is there a social stratus among the black community, or an economic stratus, or did everyone mix in?
Well, the thing is, and you know, I made a mistake one time when I gave an interview way back, I think it was 1987, 88. I told the reporter who was talking to me, he asked me how I grew up, and I told him I was poor. But, and then after I got home, I got to thinking about it. And I said, no, I was never poor. Because I had a mother, I had a father, they loved me very much. And they were miracle workers, because they made things happen that should not have happened, but somehow, you know, they pulled it off. And plus I had a loving community. Everywhere I went, it doesn't matter if, you know, it was someone else's mother or someone else's father. They were my mother and father too, or somebody else's grandmother, aunt, uncle. They were all a part of my family, including teachers, ministers. It didn't matter if they didn't teach me or if the ministers were not a minister of my church. They were a part of my life, and when you have all of that, you can never be poor.
So are you
material-wise, you know, we didn't have a lot of material things, but you had everything else to sustain you and to help prepare you for life. Now, that was greater than anything else, any gift anyone could have given me, was to help prepare me for life. Because the same rules and regulations that my parents laid down, these same rules, they followed me no matter wherever I went. Because the grown-ups at that time, they demanded respect, and they demanded to be treated the same way as your parents and your father. And so they were actually your guardians when you were away from your parents.
You were raised by the community.
Raised by the community. Oh, absolutely. Okay. Because I've gotten spankings from, you know, other kids' parents, and, you know, and anytime, you know, the grown-ups saw you doing anything, if they didn't like it, they will let your parents know. And the parents were very appreciative of it because they could meet the kids every 5 or 10 minutes, you know. And the thing is, when your parents laid out a law, said, this is how you're supposed to behave. You do not act up when you leave this house. And if you did and someone told you, well, you got a spanking. You knew how to act next time you left the house. And the worst thing you could ever do is show off on your parents in public. You never did that. Never. Usually they would just look at you and just give you a look. And the look would almost, you know, it makes you want to just stop breathing. You know, you just stop in your tracks, and the look was enough. But if you went beyond something, and they had already given you one look, then you know it was a spanking. I mean, even if you were in church. If you were in church, and they all looked back and gave you that look like, all right, I'm giving you a warning. The eyes is a warning. And so, you know, if you kept it up and got caught again, you went outside the church, and everybody knew why you was going outside, and you got your bottom spanked right outside the church. Everybody heard you. And my mother would give us like a little Kleenex or something, wipe your face, blow your nose, and go back in church. And you went right back in church. And she didn't sit you down with her. She set you right back where you were, and then she said, now put up again. But that's how it was. And you could see the parents taking kids out, bang them behind, and then, you know, but it was normal. Normal procedure. Normal procedure. And I talked to some of my girlfriends now and some of my other friends who we went to school with, and I said, oh, wow, they're talking about child abuse and all of this. I said, we wouldn't have had any parents in the black community. If the laws that they have out now were out then, even the white parents, because I noticed in Carville, the discipline of white kids at that time, those are, you know, on the lower end, they were brought up the same way I was brought up. Their parents expected the same respect and everything like that. And so we had that in common. You could see it in grocery stores. You could see it anywhere you went, that where blacks and whites were together. And I saw it more so from people, the whites who lived in Carver, than I did from when I moved over in Chapel Hill.
Did you have much interaction with the white community? Did you have white friends or?
Well, we had friends that we used to go out, since we lived in Carlboro, we used to go out and we used to play in what we call the Rock Pal. But what that really is the University of North Carolina, they have a train that comes by and they would bring them gravel, coal, sand, and they would put it down in what we call Tin Top. That's down in the Car Court area. You probably saw it. It's over there on your left after you pass the railroad track. But anyway, all the kids used to go down and play in that. And so there were some times when blacks and white kids played together, and it didn't matter to us. It's just that then when we got ready to go home, they went to their community and we went to ours. But we played together like we didn't have a care in the world. Everything was fine. But we found that it was not fine. Everything was not all right because the parents didn't see it that way. And so we were brought up not to be prejudiced. We were brought up to look, you're just as good as the next person. And you can work hard and you can make it in life. There will be people who will tell you that you can't, but you can. It's up to you. And you never let the color of your skin hold you back from doing anything that you want to do. Now that's how my parents brought us up. And many of my relatives, my aunts, grandmothers, and people like that brought us up the same way, because we were in a black community and we felt where we were never going to really leave the black community. And then we had our own schools, we had our own stores, our cafes, restaurants, we had transportation, which were the cabs. We had cabs that ran to local cab companies that ran. And so we really had everything that we needed right here in the black community. And even though we had Northside Elementary School, we also had Lincoln High School, you could succeed because the teachers were always on you.
That's another
always
thing. I would like you to tell me about
always
the teachers at Northside. What
now the
like?
Teachers at Northside, now my teachers, they split the room up. You know, you may have some kids who accelerate, you know, learn pretty fast. Then you have some who were in that little second row, and then you have some maybe on the third row. And it kind of put them like how what the speed were of the learning of the child.
So you had tracking.
It was sort of like tracking, but you all did the same work.
Right.
But she may have spent just a little bit more time with some others. But But during that day, everybody learned the same thing. You all learned the same thing. And, but everybody had to learn. It was no excuse for not learning. You were going to learn. Nobody was dumb. Everybody could learn. And so that's how the teachers, they taught us. Now, Frances Hargraves, she went beyond that. Frances Hargraves' thing was, you give me a child, and I'll teach that child. You know, if everybody else give up on this child and say, this child can't learn, I can teach the child if you give me the child. I can teach that child. But, so that's how I learned, was in the classroom, even if I might not have understood something. I knew that the teacher was going to help me to understand it. Now, there may be some who understood it, and, you know, they may move on to the next lesson, or they may move on to the next four or five questions because they got it. They know what they're doing. And then she would spend time on the other ones catching them up, you know. But we all accelerated and moved at the same time. So it's not like they might have been on, she had one lesson plan for everybody. She would not give them another lesson plan and let them move on in ahead of the class. She kept everybody together. And by you keeping everybody together like that, everybody was learning together. There may be just a little bit, maybe some who couldn't quite keep up, but she made sure that they kept up, you know, as a group. And so it may have taken us just a little bit longer to, you know, to deal with a lesson plan that she had with us. But she made sure that everybody was up together before she moved on. Yeah, and then we had homework, you know, every day. When you got home, it was mandatory to do your homework. You did your homework before you ran out to play or whatever, you know. Of course, you know, when we left school, we were ready to play. You know, we was tired of school, but it was just mandatory. You did your homework. And then sometimes if your parents had time, they would look over your homework. If not, your older siblings were responsible for looking at your homework. You just move on down the line. You know, I had older brothers, sisters, and so they had already gone through what I had to go through. And so they would help me with mine, and then I would help my younger sisters who come in behind me. And so that's just the way it went. Your older sisters and brothers, they were actually responsible for you when your parents were not at home. They acted as your parents. But if a situation got out of control, then you went to a neighbor. And when you went to a neighbor, the neighbor stepped in as your parents. And when the neighbor came over, and she tell you what to do or he tell you what to do, you did that. You did exactly what they told you to do. If you were fighting one another or whatever, and they come over and they break you up or whatever, and they tell you to sit down, they may spank both of you or whatever. Whatever it took, they did it. And that's why I said parents really truly didn't need babysitters back then, because they had built-in babysitters if you had older children and younger children. Plus you had everybody in the community, because a kid could have went to any home back then if they had a problem. Nobody shut the door. Everybody's door was open. But you had some families that you felt more comfortable with, you know, if you had a problem. And you go where you feel comfortable.
Did the teachers live in the community?
Yes, they did.
All of them?
Well, as a matter of fact, my aunt, she had a home, and she rented some rooms to teachers right back here, you know, right behind the school. And yes, R.D. Smith, as long as I've known him, and I'm 50 years old, he's always been on Caldwell Street. Ed Caldwell and his family's always been on Caldwell Street. Frances Hargraves has always been on Caldwell Street. And you know, the Caldwell Street is the same street this school is on. But our ministers, our teachers, principals, everybody lived in the same community.
So they knew your family?
They knew your family. They grew up with them. They grew up with them. They played together. You know, we were just very, very close-knit, because like I said, everything you needed was in the black community. But by having your teachers and medical people right here in your community, it showed you what you could do. You know, you were not confined to just being just anybody. You could be somebody if you really wanted to and still live in the black community, because this is where we all live. Of course, over here. Now, Northside, we would have, what you call, science fair, and we had, for Halloween, we all would have a big Halloween party. We also had plays. We would, you know, each class sometimes would give a program, and this would be during the day, during school. And we also had after-school activities that included our parents and all. And the thing I remember the most coming up in the black community supported the schools, not only financially, but they also supported the kids, the school, by parents having involvement in the children's schooling.
So they had a strong PTA?
Strong PTA and, I mean, strong parent-teacher relationship. And because the last thing a student wanted was for the teacher to pen a note to them and they have to take it home, you know, to the parents, because they know the parents are going to react to that, you know. And it's not that the parent went straight to the child, you know, said, look, you know how to act, blah, blah, blah. The parents would talk to the teacher and then we get the whole story. And but if a child would just have bad behavior in class, that was not tolerated. It was not tolerated from the teacher, the principal, nor the parents. Because at that time, as we used to call it, corporal punishment, they used to pop your hands on your knuckles, you know, with a ruler or yardstick. Or they took you behind the chalkboard, you know, and pop you on the needle, on your knuckles. But, or either they had a paddle and they spanked you with a paddle. But the thing is, you got another one when you got home. Because a teacher or a principal had to go that far with you. And so, you know, excuse me, it was just really no way out for a child back then. You really, truly had to behave and you had to have respect. It was mandatory. You know, it's like I said, it's from the womb. They're talking to you while you're in the womb. So look, before you get out, these are the rules. You know, when you get out, they're still talking to you about the rules, you know, so. Like I said, when you get up and you're talking and you're able to walk and all, you know what the rules are.
So you had this wonderful, warm, caring society and school here.
Mm-hmm.
And where were you going to go to school when you finished sixth grade?
Well, like I said, ever since probably about 5 years old, I've just dreamed about going to Lincoln, because Lincoln was just like electricity. The school was so vibrant and had so much, it's just kind of hard to explain it, but it was so alive. And it used to just beat like a drum. And it connected with everybody in the community. I guess it was something like way back over from Africa, where you beat the drums and everybody, you know, could communicate that way. But Lincoln was like that. All it was a building, but the people filled the building, and the type of things that they did inside of the building and bringing people together and bringing a community together, it was a drumbeat, but it became the heartbeat of the black community, because that's where everybody centered around. Even though the elementary school, it was beaten too, but it was a slow beat. Because it was preparing you for Lincoln, to where you would get the rest of your training, your education, and Lincoln prepared you for life, for what you're going to have to face in life. And so when I graduated sixth grade, I was so excited. I was just beyond myself, because I knew I was going to Lincoln. And when I was told I was not going to be able to go, that was one of the greatest blows. You know, I never ever felt such pain as I felt when I was told I could not go. And then when they told me where I was going, actually, I was a child who had never faced death before, and I thought that's what I was facing, or either death would have been better. It's just like telling me not to breathe. I'm not going to be able to breathe anymore, because I'm not going to Lincoln. And Lincoln was where I wanted to go. I wanted to follow in the footsteps of my older siblings. And Lincoln is where they went, and they came home and they talked about the teachers, principal, and things they did at school. And they would even mimic some of the teachers, like the principal, Mr. McDougall. They would, you know, just say, well, you know, because that's what he usually start off with. And I just couldn't wait to get there to see this famous person, even though I would see him in the community. And I even went to school from the first to the sixth with his son, you know, his only son. But that was not the same as actually going in the building and seeing him walk around in his domain and just seeing for myself the things that the kids, you know, used to say about him and the teachers and all, because they talked about the teachers too. And I wanted to see how they built the floats, because they used to have floats that they had in the parades, you know, whenever we had a homecoming parade for the school. And I wanted to be there with the athletes, you know, football, basketball. I wanted to be a majorette, but, well, I was so small back then, I knew I would never make it, but I said, well, maybe I could be in the band, you know. But my heart was in being a majorette. And as a child in grammar school, we used to go to the Christmas parade, and we would go to the homecoming parade, and Lincoln participated in both. And it's like the whole town would just turn out for Lincoln High School's band.
White and black.
White and black, just lined up the street. I mean, we could have a Christmas parade, but everybody is waiting on Lincoln's band.
What was so good about Lincoln's band?
Because when they came by, the kids, they just, what they call today, just threw down. You never saw such high stepping. Everybody's so proud, and you could look all up and down the line in the street, blacks and whites alike. They were so proud. These were our kids. Nobody made a difference. These are white, you know, black kids, you know, whites, you know, so proud of them, blacks so proud of them. But to the black community, they represented all of us, because they came from us. You know, parents there so proud of the kids out, you know, in the band and on the floats or doing whatever. Everybody doing something positive. And so when you watch them, you wanted to be like them. Even the white kids wanted to be like them. I had white kids that told me I would give anything to be in that band. But they knew, because of the racial barriers, parents wouldn't allow it, school wouldn't allow it either. And so, you know, so it was kind of like a dream of theirs too. They wanted to really be out there, because the high school band, the white high school band would come through. But they would play, but nothing extra. And so everybody was craning their necks and all. You could hear it. I mean, blacks and whites were standing on both sides of the street, standing with each other. You know, you might have had majority white over here, majority black over here, but you saw it bits and pieces. But everybody just waiting on one thing, waiting on that Lincoln band. And when they came, everybody screaming and hollering, the excitement. And our teachers over here in Northside, they told us, I don't want to catch none of you all falling behind the band. Well, this is like telling you not to breathe or cut off your legs. I mean, you couldn't. You had to. And I had my little baton, I had my little white boots, you know, like the majorettes had and all. And so I was ready. The kids in the community, they were ready. If you didn't have your little baton, and you had a stick, and you just twirl it, you know. So when the band came, you know, and they would do dances that we would do, what we call social dances, what we did at Hall Grace Center whenever we had parties and things. They would break out doing some of those dances, so everybody up and down the line was doing the dances with them. And when the band got ready to pass you, everybody was following the band. Now, I used to follow the band right up where they have Michael Jordan's restaurant. It used to be a belt store, department store used to be there. Now, I would start following the band from that moment on. And so if they were going, if this was homecoming, they would go, you know, come on down Franklin Street, and then they would cut and go down Mill Road and go back to Lincoln. So I followed behind the band, so with the other kids in the community, we had a little baton just strutting. We did everything the band did. And, you know, that was the highlight of our lives when we were growing up, when we was in elementary school, is to get behind that band. So we got behind the band, we marched with them, we saw our teachers and all, knew we were going to get it the next day in school. We didn't care. You know, this whipped me. I got to do this. It was something you had to do. So we would follow back to the school, and then you would see people hugging each other and all, and parents hugging and so proud. I mean, it was just a proud moment. The entire community was proud. And then we would have a game. It would be on a Friday. And then we would go out to Comber, because that's where they had the ball field at that time. They had it out on, what is the name of the street? It's behind the fire department out in Comber. I don't know if that's Fidelity Street or, no, it's not Fidelity Street. But anyway, right there behind the fire department in Comber. I'm trying to think what are the name of those apartments, but it's the fire department, and then you have a couple of houses, and then you have all of these apartments sitting over there to the left. And you even have a cleaner's out there. But all of that was a ball field. And so we all would rush home, you know, to get ready because we're going to the ball game. And so everybody in the community was going. Everybody. Even if you didn't have enough money or you couldn't spare the money, and, you know, you should be buying food because, like I said, it was 11 in my family. But we all were going. And my mother and father went. If my mother didn't go, then my father went, and he would take us all. If we were old enough, we would walk. But you always walk. Everybody was going, so we all just walked together. And so, so excited. And so, getting back to it, even if you could not afford it, we were willing to eat anything that week just so that we could go to the ball game on that Friday. And so when you went, you had two sides. You had the visitor side, and then you had the home team side. Now, on the visitor side, there were just as many whites that lived in Carver and Chapel Hill on the visitor side. They came to see Lincoln. Came to see Lincoln play. They came to see their team. And when you have two black bands, I mean two black teams, and you're going to have two black bands. So what it was once they got on the field, it was a competition. Which band was the best? And so Lincoln always tried to be the best because we was at home. So you had your blacks on one side, and you had whites and the other visiting team on that other side. But like I said, the whites in the community, they came out. But they was on one side, you were on the other side. But that night, everybody forgot about being black and white, because everybody was there to see Lincoln's band. And so, and they really put on a good football game. Cheerleaders were good. The bands were good. Everybody was just so happy. And then when it was over, you know, we were all proud, even if we lost. Everybody went and, you know, wanted to hug the players and all. Parents let them know it's okay, we got another game. The whites did the same thing. But they never miss a game.
Now, what was so good about the Lincoln High School football team
It's not really the football team, not really the band. It was the school exempt, that electricity, you know. It just kind of like got you involved. It's like living without electricity, and you know, you had to do everything with candles and all of that. But when Lincoln Band came on, you could see everything. Everything was all lit up, and everybody was lit up, but they were lit up inside. And so that's why I say that Lincoln got to be the heartbeat of the black community, also the heartbeat for Chapel Hill and Carrboro, because it was a school, it was a team that everybody could be proud of. And so everybody put their differences aside when it came time for Lincoln's football team to go out there and play. You had a bigger crowd at the black games than you did at the white games. Because the white kids, they played on, I think they played on what, Thursdays. But then we played a day after them. But I was, it was just jam-packed.
And Chapel Hill High School on Franklin Street there. Football game.
Well, they played at the same location. But you know, your whites went, but you very seldom had any blacks, not unless it was blacks who worked there in the field, you know, cleaning up or concession stand or whatever. That's about all that you saw. But on when we went to play, you had both.
Why don't we stop here? I know you have to go.
Okay.
And if we can meet again sometime soon.
Anytime.
I'd like to go on to hear more about Lincoln High School and also where you went to junior high and high school and what it was like for you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
This is Bob Gilgore interviewing Keith Edwards at Northside School on December the 19th in the year 2000.
Hi, good afternoon, Keith.
Good afternoon.
I'd like to start here with your view of what Lincoln High School was like once more?
Well, like I said, Lincoln High School to me was like the heartbeat of the black community. Saying that is because everything revolved around that school. 5 days a week, school was open, and that is where, you know, a majority of the black kids went that was of age to go to that school. And there was always talk from the students when they, got out of school, and they talked about teachers, talked about events that happened in the school that day. And, you know, it was just electrifying to me as a small child. I wanted to be a part of that. And to me, it was almost like my birthright that after I finished Northside Elementary School, grammar school, I would automatically go to Lincoln High School. And so I was being prepared for my transition to the high school from the fifth grade on. And so I don't know, it's just like having a school, I could breathe, I could be a person, because I felt an ownership to that school, because that's where all my siblings went, and that's where many things in the community, it happened right there in that school. And so knowing that after I completed the sixth grade, I was going to be able to go there, which was a lifetime dream for a child, to me is likened to a person being in a cocoon like a butterfly. You start off that way, and that's what the black community represented to me, and also Lincoln. Once I was in a cocoon here at Northside Elementary School, but when I thought I was going to be going to Lincoln would have been the place for me to come out of the cocoon and become a butterfly, and also with the nutrient and, you know, the community like atmosphere that Lincoln portrayed, it would help me fly. But it would help me fly in the right direction that I needed to fly, living in the type of society that I was living in at that time. You can have wings, and you can grow those wings from anywhere, but if you grow your wings from the right place, you can always fly right. But since I didn't get to go to Lincoln, I came out of the cocoon, and I end up coming out as a butterfly with weakened wings. I didn't have enough room to fly when I went to, an all-white school. I was the only person in my class of color. I remember sitting in the back of the classroom away from the other students as if I might contaminate them. Now, coming from a world where you love, you cherish, you're protected, you have security, it was like being in a foreign country, but it should not have been, because this was a part of my country too, but I was just in a place where people did not want me to be and where I did not want to be. So you see, going in as a butterfly, and with weak wings, no one helped me strengthen my wings to fly. I would have gotten that from Lincoln High School, but I did not get it. So without the support that I would have gotten if I had gone to Lincoln High School, an all-black school, I had to develop my wings on my own. And sometimes the road was, well, my wings were weighted down, very, very heavy. Sometimes I didn't want to fly. But in those days, you did what your parents told you to do. My parents told me to go to that school because I was going to get a better education. Now, that's what was in their mind. I was going to get a better education. But education alone does not make a person.
you have to have the nutrient, you have to have the right ingredients in order for you to get a real education. And so I got a different education than the one that I thought that I was going to receive. And so I made the best of the situation that I was in. And looking back on my life, I don't think to this day that I am able to fly the way that I would have been able to fly if I had, you know, some time at Lincoln and that atmosphere. And so therefore, you're looking at a person who has a void that cannot be filled. Even after all these years, I'm 50 years old now. When I pass Lincoln School, I get teary-eyed because of the loss, the sense of loss. It's almost like losing someone very close to you, a family member, a death. And that's the only way I can describe it, how I feel. Now, there are many other students, black students, who went to the all-white school with me. They may not feel that way, but I had dreamed, you know, my hopes, my desires, everything was just wrapped up in going to Lincoln. And when that did not happen, it changed me. I was a very angry person because I did not get to go. I was angry at my parents, but I could not show it. And after the first day in the seventh grade when I went to Chaffield Junior High, I came home and I came right over here, north side. It's a big rock to the left of us out there on that empty field where